Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What first number?
40.
40. Oh, okay. 29. Chapter 29. Yad boyad vati vatoyam. Suryas tapati yad boyad. Yad boyad varshati devo. Bhagano bhati yad boyad. Yad boyad vati vatoyam. Suryas tapati yad boyat. Yad boyad varshati devo. Bhagano bhati yad bhayat. Yat. Of whom? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhayat. Out of fear. Vati. Blows. Vataha. The wind. I am this. Suryaha, sun. Tapati, shines. Yat, of whom? Bayat, out of fear. Yat, of whom? Bayat, out of fear. Varshati sends rains. Devaha, the god of rain. Bhaganaha, the host of heavenly bodies. Bhati, shine. Yat, of whom? Bayat, out of fear. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the wind blows. Out of fear of Him, the sun shines. Out of fear of Him, the rain pours forth showers. And out of fear of Him, the host of heavenly bodies shed their luster. Purport. The Lord states in Bhagavad Gita, Mayad Yokshina Prakriti Suyate. Nature is working under my direction. The foolish person thinks that nature is working automatically. But such an atheistic theory is not supported in the Vedic literature. Nature is working under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. And we also find here that the sun shines under the direction of the Lord, and the cloud pours forth showers of rain under the direction of the Lord. All natural phenomena are under superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Yes, bro. Calendar is in the place. Yeah, okay. Bhagavan ke hi bhai se vayu vati hai. Unhin ke bhai se surya chamakta hai. Varsha ka devata pani barsata hai. Aur unhin ke bhai se nakshatron kasamuha chamaktahe. Tatpartya. Bhagavad Gita me Bhagavan ka vachan hai. Maya dyokshena prakriti suyate. Prakriti mere nirdeshana mein karya karti hai. Murk sochte hai. Murk sochta hai. Ki prakriti swatak karya shil hai. Kintu vaidik sahitya dwara aise anishwaravadi siddhant ki pushti nahi hoti. Prakriti parameshwara ki adyakshata mein karya kar rahi hai. Iski pushti Bhagavad Gita mein hui hai. Aur yahan par bhi hum dekhte hain ki Bhagavan ke hi nirdeshana mein surya chamakta hai aur badal pani barsata hai. Sari prakritika Gatanayeng Bhagavan Vishnu ki adyakshata mein gotita hoti hai. This is actually a very famous poetic expression. Yadbayad vati fato yam. It actually originally is found in the Katha Upanishad. This is an allusion to ancient Upanishadic phraseology. Out of fear of the Supreme, the wind blows, the sun shines, and what else? The rain god pours down his rain. And then Mityudavati Panchamaha, and death is the fifth of that company. And he's running out of fear, running to do his business, to catch the dying souls, out of fear of the Supreme. An interesting statement. We are, in our materialistic modern worldview, thinking that nature is not a conscious being. In fact, we don't even ascribe intelligent consciousness to most of nature's creatures. We don't consider that the animals have any real consciousness, that they're really, you know, we could say they're alive, but they're not conscious. That's what we say. And therefore, there's nothing wrong in killing them to eat. But that's a misconception. In many ways, animals are conscious, just their consciousness is more covered over than human consciousness. Human consciousness is also covered over, very limited, and restricted and perverted. And animal consciousness is just more so. Dumenavriyate vakhnir yata dar shomalena cha yata garbenavrahito Dumena, I'm sorry. What is it anyway? Can't remember the third line. Tatatenanim avritam. The soul's consciousness is covered over by ignorance, but ignorance has 3 degrees. Real ignorance. And then moderate ignorance, which is called passion. And then slight ignorance, which is called sattva-guna. Please don't talk. Oh, no, don't hit him. Okay. Now he's going to cry. And slight ignorance in the mode of passion. But there's just different degrees of covering. It all amounts to the restriction of our consciousness. But all living beings have the same kind of consciousness. It's just different degrees of covering. And we may say, okay, the living beings, down to the animals, down to the vegetables, are alive and conscious. But what about the minerals and the air and the wind and the sunlight? That's just material energy. That doesn't have consciousness. That's not alive. Yes, From one point of view, you're right. The material elements themselves are not conscious. Even your so-called living body is just a product of material elements, and it itself is not conscious. Any more than the computer on my office desk is conscious, the human body sitting in front of that computer, the body itself is not alive. The soul inside is alive. And using that body and motivating it, animating it with its own intelligence and consciousness. In the same way as the human being is pushing the keys on the keyboard, writing a program, and feeding so-called artificial intelligence into the computer. So the body is just a less extended machine. It's the machine that we carry around our whole life. The machine breaks, the warranty runs out, and we can't fix it anymore. That's called death, and we have to take another body. And then we have extended machines that we build for ourselves, artificial machines. But it's all mechanical. It's all dead consciousness. That is true. But because everything that actually happens only happens because of the influence of and the participation of living consciousness, there is a factor of life, even in the forces of nature. Yes, the elements themselves are inert, but the phenomena of nature are not just the manifestations of inert matter doing its thing. Inert matter by itself doesn't do anything. Jiva Bhutam Mahabaho Yaidam Daryate Jagat. The whole world, with all its natural phenomena, the blowing of the wind, the shining of the sun, birth and death, these phenomena of nature are only possible by the impetus and the control and the direction given by living intelligence. This is explained to us in the Vedas and the Vedic literatures how the material world works. There is a management run by very powerful and intelligent beings. We're told they're called devatas or demigods. The Supreme Lord is in control of everything, but he just sits back and deputizes the actual work of administration of the material creation to his agents, the demigods. From Brahma down, these very powerful, intelligent beings make the material world work. Vayu, Surya, Indra, Mrityu, these are demigods, but they are working under the superintendence of the Supreme Intelligence, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is expressed in a very curious, poetic way in this statement, which originally goes back to the Upanishads. Out of fear of that Supreme Person, the wind blows, the sun shines, and the rain falls. That means that the presiding demigods are in awe of, and here it's said poetically, afraid of the Supreme Person. It's not the kind of fear that an ordinary person would have. The child is being quiet. The boy is quiet because if he opens his mouth and says something, you're going to slap him again in the face. He's afraid of you. That is ordinary fear. But the demigods are not like that. The God is going to come and beat them with a stick? or that they're going to be fired, you know, they'll lose their job. We don't hear of that. There's a story about one man who went to heaven and became substitute for Indra when Indra got in trouble with having an affair with someone's wife. And Indra had to go into exile and leave heaven. And they found a very qualified human being to take his place temporarily. What was his name? Trigartha. No, Nahusha. Nahusha. Nabaga. Nabaga or Nahusha? Nahusha. And he really wasn't spiritually qualified for the job. He was competent, but he got carried away by it. Became proud. I'm the king of heaven now. The demigods, or the sages, the saptarishis, he ordered them, you become my palanquin carriers and carry my palanquin. This is a great insult. Even Indra should not insult the topmost rishis. And then he just went too far and decided, Indra left his wife behind, now I'm Indra, so now she's my wife, and she should come and serve me. So she didn't know what to do. She went to Brihaspati. Brihaspati said, you agree, but if he steps 1 foot toward your house, we'll curse him. And they cursed him. When he tried to approach the wife of Indra, they cursed him to fall down from his position. And this Nahusha fell down from the heavenly planets. And I think he got caught in the middle of the sky. And he's still hanging there, upside down in the sky. You can see him in the sky at night, if you know where to look. So here's one case of someone who lost his job as Indra. But that was an unusual situation. Normally, the real Indra, the one who was actually qualified for the job, who was born and trained up to take that position, fully installed as the real Indra, you never hear about him before the proper time losing his job, being punished by being fired. What to speak of corporal punishment or capital punishment. Demigods are immune from this. They have very good job security. They can expect they're going to keep their jobs until the end of the Manvantara. After that, something can happen. In fact, our Indra today, bless his soul, I don't want to get hit by a thunderbolt, but it's already known, it's there in the Bhagavatam, that at the end of this Manvantara, after several hundred million years, or maybe another 100 million years, it's already written that he's going to lose his job. He's not going to die. Purandara Indra is not the end of his life. But he's going to get kicked out of heaven by his old enemy, Bali Maharaj, who will become the next Indra in the 8th Manvantara. That's written in the Bhagavatam. Everybody knows it. But that doesn't happen until after his term of office is finished. Then he has to leave anyway. He's supposed to go out anyway. So, Yavad Adhikaram. The demigods stay in their positions for as long as the lifetime of Manu, the reign of Manu, which is some 350 million years, I think, is the reign of one Manu. That's how long demigods stay in their jobs. And they have pretty tight job security. They're not afraid of losing their jobs. They're not afraid of being beaten. They're not afraid of being killed by their superiors, by the Supreme Lord. They are confident of protection of the Lord. There is faithful servants. But it's understood, okay, although they have no fear, cause of ordinary fear, still, the statement is not only pure poetry, pure exaggeration. There is some fear there. Because generally, although with some exceptions, the demigods are not pure devotees of the Supreme Lord. They are what we call Sakama Bhaktas, mixed devotees, or to translate it more literally, devotees with material desires. Even Brahma, in general, there are many Brahmas. It's a job position, and there are many universes, and universes are recreated. So there have been many Brahmas, and there will be many in the future, and there are many right now in different universes. So in general, a living entity becomes Brahma because he has the material desire, although it's a very subtle one, the desire to be the creator and controller of an entire universe. That's a big material desire. That desire may be appropriately used for the service of the Lord, but it's still a material desire. And what to speak of someone like Indra? He wants to have great power and opulence and enjoyment. Indra, anyway, I don't want to invite any thunderbolts. I don't want to say anything about Indra. Demigods in general are not pure in their attitude. They have some material motives. They're intelligent, and they're honest, and they're faithful and upright creatures, much better than ordinary human beings. But they're not on the level of pure devotion in general. Therefore, they serve the Supreme Lord, but do it with mixed motives, with somewhat selfish motives. But they're doing the right thing with somewhat impure and selfish motives. That is a cause of fear. It may be subtle fear, but it's enough to impel the demigods to not dare step out the limits of their responsibilities and duty, not dare to act whimsically. That fear is there, that they know they cannot indulge in free behavior the way that Krishna's intimate devotees can. Krishna's cowherd boyfriends can challenge him. His equal friends of the same age, they can challenge him. Why are you the best? I can beat you. To his face. But you can't see Brahma or Indra saying that to Krishna. In fact, Indra tried and he got into serious trouble. Brahma didn't really challenge Krishna. He was just playing with him, testing him. But he was also defeated. They are generally afraid to do such a thing, just to challenge the authority of the Supreme Lord. They cannot indulge in things that the pure devotees can do in their intimate relationship with the Supreme Person. So there is fear. Fear of committing offense. Fear of displeasing Krishna. Even if they're not going to lose their jobs. When Indra did the very serious offense of trying to destroy Vrindavan with his reins, forcing Krishna to lift up Govardhan Hill, the reaction was not that serious. He was mildly chastised. He was made to feel very embarrassed for attempted murder, for attempted genocide. I don't know what in the modern international law what the punishment for attempted genocide is. I don't know if anybody actually died in that flood. Maybe someone did. But even if no one died, it's a crime to intend to kill the whole countryside and make all measures to do that and only be prevented by extraordinary obstacles. Even attempting to kill one person is a serious crime. It can put you into jail for many years, even if you don't harm the person. What is big, trying to kill a whole countryside, and it happens to be the place where Krishna's greatest devotees live. It's a very serious crime. And his punishment for that crime is that Krishna didn't want to talk to him. Basically, Krishna didn't even say anything to him. Krishna didn't even chastise him, really. He just stood there silently. and paid no attention as Indra came in to apologize. Indra's punishment was his own remorse, and Krishna's not responding to him by saying anything. That was his great punishment for attempted genocide. Of course, for the demigods to kill many human beings is not criminal. It's their just ordinary business for them. Just like I'm, before going to bed, we're putting on the mosquito machine. And hundreds of mosquitoes are going to die. Because I've plugged in the mosquito machine. I don't think about it. I think this is just what I have to do before going to sleep. You know, I've been told by my guru to do it. Don't catch malaria. Use the mosquito machine. The Vaishnava has told me to do it. But I'm committing genocide. I'm killing hundreds of living beings by doing that. So for us, and this is where we're sanctioned by Shastra, Sadhureva Samodavya, Sarva Vrishtikahatyaya. Even a saintly person is happy when a scorpion or a poisonous snake is killed. And mosquitoes are just as dangerous. Even though they're little boys with just a little stinger. You don't even feel it until it starts itching. But that can kill you. The malaria can kill you. It's attacking with a lethal weapon. So it's a person you can kill with justification. And even the saintly person will say, yes, you've done the right thing. What to speak then of the demigods? Indra, when he creates a typhoon that kills thousands of people, when he sends a tidal wave that kills 250,000 people, he's not to blame. He's just doing his job. It's already been fated that at such and such date there will be a terrible flood. You can read it in the horoscopes from, you know, that were written 100 years before. Any good astrologer can tell you this was meant to happen. It was fated. Indra is just carrying out his job, and he's not to blame for it. But trying to destroy Vrindavan, the place where Krishna's pure devotees live, that's another thing. That wasn't fated. That wasn't meant to happen. And Indra was going out of line when he tried to do that. That was a crime. He's thinking, I'm able to kill at my desire. And he tried to apply that principle wrongly to Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan. Krishna stopped him. But again, the punishment was very mild. And he was he offered his prayers, he apologized, he arranged for Krishna's abhishek, and acknowledged Krishna's supremacy. And then he was allowed to go back home. No damage done to Indra. Even his reputation was saved. So the fear that Indra and the other demigods have of the Lord is very mild, subtle fear. Krishna is not a terrible Lord. If you work for him, you don't have to be afraid of being destroyed. You don't have to be afraid of being tortured. And you don't have to be afraid of being unfairly exploited. And you don't have to be afraid of losing your job. If you work for Krishna, you'll never suffer from being fired. A position with Krishna, working for Krishna, is eternal. Eternal job security. Suridam sarvabhutanam. Krishna claims, and he says, you should recognize, I am the most well-wishing friend of everyone. Sarvabhutanam. Not just my own few friends that I really care for them, but I care for everyone. And not only I care, but I can't do anything, but I'm capable of taking care of everyone, every living being. I want to take care of them, and I'm perfectly capable of doing it. If anyone suffers, It's not because I can't help them. Not because I don't want to help them. It's because that's how I'm helping them. The suffering I let them have is for their good. I'm everybody's eternal well-wishing friend. So Krishna, he doesn't say that about Indra, that Indra is also like that. Or that Surya is also like that. Or even that Lord Brahma is also like that. Or even Lord Shiva. He says, I am. He's not putting himself in a category with anyone else. I, just me. I am everybody's well-wishing friend. Don't expect anyone else, any demigod, to be that kind. Even if the demigod, it said the demigods are doing their jobs out of terror of the Supreme Lord, don't take that too seriously. It's a very subtle, mild kind of fear. Krishna is a very kind Lord. And he's very kind to his devotees. Not only the most intimate devotees, but anyone who's trying to be his devotee, Krishna deals very kindly with them. Kaunteya patijanihi namai bhakta pranasyati. Arjun, you should declare it boldly, by your example and by your words, that my devotee never perishes. Not just you, Arjun, that you're not going to perish. I promise you that you and your four brothers will not shed a drop of blood in this battle, even though almost everyone else will be killed. Almost everyone. There will be rivers of blood, but none of that blood will be yours. You will not die, you will not be wounded in this battle, you and your four brothers. I can tell you that now. But I'm making a more broad statement. Not only five Pandavas won't perish, my devotee, anyone who's my devotee, will never perish. That's a very universal statement. Only Krishna can claim that, that his devotee never perishes, never suffers any ill. Nahi kalyana krit kaschid durgatim tata gachati. If you're doing the highest good of trying to serve Krishna, then you'll never go to a bad destination. If you have difficulty, it's for your purification and your good. But you're destined to reach eternal happiness if you're trying to serve Krishna. So this is a very edifying and beautiful statement, that the demigods are doing their service out of fear of Krishna. Jai Shri Gurnitai, Shri Krishna Balaram, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. But it doesn't mean we have reason to fear. Especially if we don't take the option of becoming demigods. And we try to go back to Godhead without taking birth as a demigod. Then we have no reason to fear. Then we can finish our business up very quickly and then be happy forever after that. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? No? Okay. Horrible. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.